podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello everyone, welcome back to My Mate Bought a Toaster. This is episode 3 of series 3. Today's guest is the magnificently funny Rob Rouse. So funny, in fact, that I have decided to leave in all the nonsense before we actually started, because it just made me laugh so much. You know, if you're only here for the purchase history, well, I'm afraid things are going to get a little bit tangential for the next few minutes, but it made me laugh a lot, so I've kept it in. Anyway, enjoy this episode, enjoy Rob Rouse, and enjoy the bit at the end where I tell you about the Patreon. Patreon.com/toasterpod. But hey, we can look forward to that a bit at the end. Okay, thanks for coming. And you, I tell you what, Rob, I'm going to use a technical term here. I don't want to confuse you or baffle you, all right? And I'm, if there's any technical terms you don't understand, just say, all right? Hands up.
Yeah.
Okay. You're coming in a bit hot in your cans.
Okay.
So what's happening is I'm hearing...
Well, I'm very happy to be here, Tom. That might be why that's happening. I haven't really spoke to anyone outside of my immediate family for quite a while, so if I'm coming in very hot in my cans, that's probably why.
Do you have a talc?
Never talc. I don't believe in it. I never will. I believe what I understand. I remember it from childhood, and all I remember it doing is if you're not completely dry... Using a talc in order to dry yourself just creates small baubles of cheese.
Yeah.
Are you a talker?
Never have. It's a poor man's towel. It's just not something I've ever really thought about doing. My father-in-law does it because he's a boomer. And, you know, they probably use the ash of Blitz bombs to double up as talk. That's probably why he does it.
The only way to get dry for a boomer. Yeah. I mean, seeing as you ask, if I really want to dry off, then I will, if there's no one around, I will use my wife's hairdryer just to kind of get, you know, air dry the... harder to reach places.
Has she ever objected to that? Because there'd be no right to, and yet I know my wife would object to, because she's got a Dyson. And if I ever put my, you know, if I ever approached my bits with the Dyson, she'd be absolutely livid with me. And yet there's no contact. I'm not popping it
in. No, exactly. Yeah, you're not popping it in.
I'm not inflating an airbed or anything with it.
No, exactly. You're simply using it for one of its, I'd say, prescribed uses. I imagine Dyson himself probably did a lot of trials on his
his own Brexity balls. Yeah, he probably did.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Probably did. Listen, Rob, so this isn't what the podcast is about. I don't know. Sorry, I should have explained that. I don't know. God, sorry. I think you're thinking of How Clean Are Your Bits? Which is also on Great Big Owl. That's another podcast.
Yeah, that is a different one, isn't it?
Altogether? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's fine. I'll only go in if I need to refresh... Sorry, that was a talk burp there.
Keep those coming. I love a talk burp. Also, it means I can play this podcast to my wife in the car and it'll make her gag. Any talk burps and she instantly
lovely.
Gags. Yeah, it's a proper superpower that. Right, okay. Should we start or
so did your wife gag if someone does a normal burp or just talk burp?
No, it's a specific type of talk burp.
Which said it's a Pacific type. It's one of the Pacific types.
You know, like Jeremy Lyons does them, the brilliant comedy character Jeremy Lyons. Absolutely amazing. It's those that makes her go, oh God, and she has to run out the room. If I'm in the car and I burp, she's like fine with it. Although my friend Brian, you remember Brian? Moved to Australia. Brian and Michelle. And Michelle's got a real problem with bogeys, right? Real problem with bogeys. And he once put a bogey on the steering wheel of his car while they were driving along. And he was driving, he put a bogey on the steering wheel and said, what's that, Michelle? And she looked at it and he wouldn't touch it. And she threw up. She literally filled the footwell of their car with vomit because she was so appalled.
Was she driving or was he driving?
He was driving. He refused to take it off. And she's like, Brian, I'm going to...
My granddad was a GP.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember my dad told me a story, whether it was apocryphal or not, I don't know, about... a bloke who had one of his patients, or a patient of a friend it must have been, because otherwise he would have been down for some form of negligence, who had appalling constipation. He'd struggled with it for years. And I think they just changed his laxative prescription. And apparently he was driving home, and this is like in the, you know, 50s when cars were very different. And as he was on the main road, and he was suddenly overwhelmed with the need to go properly. And the immense effort that it was requiring for him to not burst into his trousers, he pulled the steering wheel off, crashed, and then shot himself. Which I was reminded by the thought of footwell sick. Oh dear. It's almost like an old fashioned airbag going off.
Oh God, that's so funny.
I mean, I don't know.
It's the indignity of crashing the car and then shitting
Hey, we're rolling here. It's the podcast. Welcome to it.
This is My Mate Bought a Toaster, and that is, of course, the brilliant Rob Rose, wonderful stand-up comedian, fabulous actor as well, of course, one of the stars of Upstart Crow, and all sorts of stuff besides.
Oh, tish and pish.
Let's go back in time, Rob. Yeah. And we're going straight back to 2009.
Oh, straight back to 2009. The heady day. Was Amazon around then?
Oh, it was, and it had been for a long time by 2009.
When was it invented?
Well, I think sort of about 95, 96 is when
it... Was it really?
Yeah.
And that would have just been, what, Jeff Bezos... with a bicycle and a basket on the front.
Essentially him just delivering sort of copies of Captain Corelli's mandolin to people.
Yeah.
That was it. And our sort of earliest archaeological drawings on the cave we've had on this podcast, Matt Green bought a book about Martin Amos in 1999.
Martin Amos,
yeah. You know the one. Ew. It's a lovely start. It's a strong start, Rob. You have bought on the 18th of September,
yeah,
a large film industry clapperboard.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know what that was.
There you go.
I've got that for... Did I buy it for someone for a present?
All right.
I think it was. Or it was a primitive form of meat tenderizer. I'm right. Not entirely sure. I remember. I think it was that. I think it was. It was doing when. I think we kept one, or someone gave me one,
yeah,
when we made the Duck films, which was way back in 2000 and maybe 3, I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
When we had a pet duck, Shaniqua, that lived with us in the flat and was completely incontinent.
Oh,
so she wore nappies around the flat, but we did manage to make 10 spoof movie trailers.
Oh,
all shot,
lovely.
Filmed in our house at the time.
Yeah.
And my good friend Dave Lambert, who I think now he directed Zapped. He
with this clapperboard.
Maybe
they didn't have one on set, and he's like, "It's all right, my mate Rob bought me one."
Yeah, and we bought it for his birthday. I think it's for Dave's birthday.
Right. Okay. Nice. Lovely clapperboard there. Also, on the same day, you've bought this. Really completes the gift. Crayola anti dust white chalk. Of course, you've got chalk to write on the clapperboard with.
Absolutely. Well, also, I always get a bit of chalk just because Helen likes it, and she can draw on the walls and stuff.
Yes,
and I can easily clean them off.
You can go out and draw on the pavements as well. That's
exactly,
you know.
Yeah, she draws on the outside of the house. It's mainly she draws like phalluses and things, and on other people's houses. But I say, you know, allowing her to express that side of her behaviours essentially keeps her out of the prison system.
Yeah, it's nice for her. It's nice for her to have a hobby as well. It's good that she's got something to do. And also,
yeah,
the thing about chalk is, you know, you and I both know it is graffiti, but chalk has got a sort of innocent 1950s blitz thing going on. So,
that's right, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Just... I mean, don't get me wrong. Helen would much rather be permanently defacing public buildings and people's houses, putting dog shit through their letterboxes and stuff like that. But but giving her the chalk, it just rolls back on that kind of destructive tendency. Helen's my wife, by the way.
Sure.
That destructive tendency.
Not one of the ducks wearing a nappy. That is...
No, that's correct.
What were the ducks called?
We had one duck.
Oh, Shaniqua, you said.
Shaniqua. And there was another duck called Eric, who we got. And Eric... R.I.P. Eric and R.I.P. Shaniqua. Eric only lived in our charge for about 4 days.
Okay, because Eric was amorous with Shaniqua?
No, I think we just think, I remember at the time, I just recorded, I think, an episode of the 99p Challenge.
Oh, yeah.
At the old, what's the old BBC radio place?
Drill Hall.
Drill Hall, that was it. And... and Helen rang to say that Eric had just died in her hand, and he just didn't make it. But we got lucky with Shaniqua from the bucket of ducks we chose from, but Eric he just didn't make it.
I've got a question, which I've never ever asked this question. What is a duck's funeral like?
Well, to my eternal shame. Tom,
don't tell me it's just a flush. No.
I cannot remember Eric's service.
You've blanked it out, mate.
I don't remember who did the reading. I don't know who did the reading. Yeah, I probably blanked it out. I don't know whether it was a bin or an incineration. I'm not entirely sure. tough memories. But when Shaniqua...
It's important that my guests cry at least once during the episode.
Yeah,
so
absolutely. That's what lockdown's all about, isn't it? Yeah. Laughing and crying, for Christ's sake. But when Shaniqua left after five roller coaster years on this planet, with 10 movies under her belt, and the 11th, which never saw the light of day, which was... Jurassic Duck, which we never actually we did some of the pre-production on, but we never that one hit the cutting room floor. But her funeral was a very sad affair. I remember I was doing the warm-ups for 8 out of 10 Cats at the time. And it was in the day, and Helen was out, the duck was in the back garden. For a lavatory, and then came back out, and she was slightly torn asunder on the garden there, and the fox, the culprit was still was just looking at me. And I was devastated, obviously, and I rang Ruth, the producer at Endemol, and she said, and she was gutted and said, "Take as long as you need, love. We'll get someone else in." And then the following week, I'd just done the warm-up, and Frankie Boyle put his arm around me and said how gutted he was to hear about the duck, and that we all missed her. which really does show the true side of Frankie Boyle.
Yeah.
That the public don't get to see.
That's right. Sweet. That's right. We've really seen under the Boyle bonnet there. Yes.
But the service for Shaniqua was there was a close friends, and we buried her underneath and had planted a rose on the top.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. But also, let's not forget R.O.P. Mrs. Miyagi, who also was taken that fateful early afternoon. Who's Mrs. Miyagi was a chicken that we would get. She was an ex-battery chicken that I don't know how. Someone else had rescued her, and then they had to go on holiday, and she ended up living with us and stayed there. But the two of them got on.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Miyagi was very old, a little black chicken. Yeah. And she used to enjoy. Did you used to be on Magic?
Yeah, I still am, mate. Thanks for listening.
Right. Lovely. No, absolutely. Regular listener. Thanks for calling in. And she used to love Magic FM.
Oh, my.
And if I had it on, she'd come in through the French windows and sit on the floor by the radio listening to Magic. So she could have been one of your long-term listeners, Tom.
Oh, mate. I noticed there was a definite dip in the radars when Mrs. Miyagi passed on.
I mean, when we dig into commercial radio, we know that every listener counts.
They really do.
It's a dying craft.
You get teams of commercial radio presenters just going around the streets, and if they hear someone's dying who listens to their station, they jump in, you know, paddles onto the chest straight away.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't go!
Clear!
Still going.
We're okay. We're still number four. Sometimes you gotta spice up your life in the bedroom. How about you go online and buy a sexy costume? Loving at this age doesn't have to be doom and gloom. Oh, it's time you felt so fine, you buy a sexy costume.
You skip ahead now, Rob, to November 2011. This must have been a very dark time for you. You bought the official Cliff Richard A3 calendar.
Yes.
A proper low point here.
Oh, that's a hysterical laughter. I'm actually crying now. Yeah, 2011 calendar.
Yeah, well, the 2012 calendar. It's A3, so there's a lot of cliff there.
That's a lot of cliff, isn't it? Yeah, it's a lot of cliff.
Looking good as well. He looks great on the front. Yeah.
I bet he does. I want to say it must have been a gift for someone.
Yeah, it does say this is a gift order on there, to be fair. So you've got that out is available to you. And you know, you could just say maybe it's just a present to yourself. You've got to love yourself. Why not?
Yeah, it could have been. I mean, if anyone who understands about self-love, surely it would have to be Cliff.
Yeah, it really would. I mean,
I mean, it's well documented that he's never actually been attached to... anyone
still
anyone.
Available he's still available
still,
isn't he
still
yeah
hey just still young free and single
just waiting for the right girl
yeah are just you, waiting are it you, wasn't Cliff? Subarka it turned out but I remember doing some gigs actually in Dubai a long time ago and it was the one when we got stranded out there for an extra month because of the volcano.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Around that time. So this could have been where I built the deep connection with Cliff.
Right.
I remember when we did one gig at a place called the Aviation Club. It's across the road from like a stadium.
Right.
And on the same night that we were doing a comedy gig, you know, just as a normal, you know, about a couple hundred people in a bar. Cliff was playing the stadium, and I managed to go out and hear him kick into Devil Woman. I think he opened up with Devil Woman.
Oh.
And I don't mind telling you, Tom, the place went fucking nuts. Oh, wow. I mean, you could feel the bass was so heavy, it made you shit your pants. It was incredible.
Cliff Richard and the Brown Note. They've been friends for a long time.
And he came out and he's going, "Whoa, you're just a devil woman." And everyone was going, absolutely. It really was going off. It was probably one of the most incendiary live performances I've ever heard.
Were you there for Cliff Richard in Dubai in 2012? Yeah, yes, he was.
And I'm stacking that up against, I saw the comeback gig of Rage Against the Machine at the Reading Festival, which I can't remember when that was. That was sort of, roughly the same kind of time, and I was there with two of my old mates, and we were both all about, I don't know, late 30s, and we were 100 yards back, and we thought we were going to die. I've been to some rough gigs in my time. And it was brilliant. And I remember as well, because the Rage Against the Machine wouldn't let the BBC show it, like kind of, fuck you guys, which was cool. And Zane, the Zipper Low, was there going, hey, but, you know, they won't let us show it. So, you know, wow. And, he's a bit of a dick, isn't he?
He is.
I
wouldn't want to give away any inside industry knowledge about Zane Lowe, but massive arsehole. Oh, I might have done it.
Right.
I might have done it.
I lost all faith in that man when Beyonce was at Glastonbury. Which I remember, I was in the audience and I saw her come out and shimmy and shake her tail feathers, and it was absolutely astonishing.
Iconic.
Yeah, it was amazing. Grown men wept.
Oh, of course.
It was incredible, incredible. And then I went and watched the highlights, and there was that awful clip of when Lauren Laverne, bless her, was just waxing lyrical about what an event it was and how excited it was. And she'd been in the crowd. And Zayn just kind of went at the end of her eulogy. Eulogy.
Well, not you. But she wasn't,
speech.
She wasn't
it was an impassioned, genuine speech.
Yeah.
And he just sneered at her. And went, anyway, I was watching Queens of the Stone Age. And I love Queens of the Stone Age. And I've seen them live loads of times.
Yeah.
But I chose to watch Beyonce because I've never seen Beyonce live. I've knocked my cans off them. Impassioned. They're back on. The cans are hot again. And I remember thinking, you absolute fucking turd of a man.
Yeah.
Who are you? What's wrong with
but
you?
But how far out of the loop now when you look back, the distance we've travelled, that was a thing, you know, a kind of indie kids looking at Beyonce and going, no, like, why would I like R&B as well? But the idea of being able to hold two different tastes in your brain at the same time, turns out, very much possible.
Yeah, absolutely. If you love music and you get it, if you feel music. Mm. And so, which is a very long-winded way of saying, because we got to them from Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah.
And me, Steve and John generally thought we were going to die, and we had to, literally like we're getting out of a battle, we had to pile out when they went into Bullet in Your Head, and they'd opened with Killing in the Name. It was insane.
Oh, they'd opened with Killing in the Name.
I can't remember.
But where'd you go from there?
When you listen to that, the whole first album is just constant incendiary music. Mm. It was amazing. But we thought we were going to die and we had to get out there. We went to the back to catch our breath. We were crushed against a fence on the way out. but that pales into insignificance next to
Cliff.
The carnage of Cliff opening up in the Dubai International Tennis Stadium. And you could literally, you could hear people losing their shit in there. Absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely life-changing.
Yeah,
life-changing.
A Cliff Richard mosh pit.
Transcendent. Oh. Like the amount of old ladies wearing poison in there, the atmosphere, poison's a scent, isn't it? Or samsara. It was heady. It was so heady.
This reminds me of you doing a bit of material years ago about Tom Jones. You had a brilliant Tom Jones impression. Do you remember you used to think about Tom Jones?
Oh, I had a big bit on Tom Jones. Again, I saw Tom live at the at Hyde Park.
Yeah.
And I remember it was when they started doing outdoor gigs there. And there was a point in the concert where Tom's microphone cut out. So there's a full band and PA, and you could still hear him singing on the stage. But in the distance, it was absolutely outstanding. Incredible.
Literally. Tarzan Unplugged.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Hi there, I'm Yasmin Akram. Join myself and my friend Philippa Dunn each week for our podcast, We Heart Worry, a show about cars and their engines. Obviously not. It's a show where we talk about our fears, our worries and our anxieties in a bid to help you with yours. And we just have a laugh as well. So join us. There's nothing to be scared of. I promise.
All right, let's crash on through then. 2014, Rob. So you're no longer living in London now. You've moved out of town. You're living in the countryside.
In the countryside, up in the north, in the Peak District, yep.
Beautiful, beautiful part of the world. All sorts of things here, as I'd expect.
Great for fly tipping. Go on.
The estate agents don't put you don't see that on House in the Country, do you?
No. Yeah, it's a lot of fly tipping.
Yeah, if you really want to get rid of a lot of shit, move to the country. I knew this would come up eventually. Of course, you've got on the 11th of November 2014, the large painted gold glitter wall hanging deer stag's head. Obviously, you've got yourself a stag's head because you're a landed man living in the countryside now.
Yeah, exactly. That. On first impressions, may appear to be something that possibly I bought my wife in order to, for a birthday present or thereabouts, to decorate a room. When in actual fact, it was to attach it to the front of my car to make me look like a successful country gentleman. I just simply drilled through the bonnet, and then a bolt and a nut on the back and a washer.
Yeah.
And then literally, you know, heads turn when you've got I'd say it's probably about 2 feet across, glittered stag head.
It's something
on the front of your dented Volkswagen Passat.
It's just a nice sort of. Otherwise, people might think you're a salesman driving the Passat.
Yeah.
And now they know you're not a salesman. Perhaps, you're a killer.
Yeah, or perhaps a family man who's just kind of, you know, just thrown in the towel. But yeah, it's a statement piece, essentially.
Mm. It is absolutely beautiful. It's a really nice stag's head you've got there, stuck on the front of your car. Is that genuinely where it is on the front of your car? Because that is
no, I ended up after about 5 years taking it off the front of the car and gave it to Helen as a present, where it promptly fell off the wall and it shattered. And then it remained on a tray, a tea tray, for about another couple of years under the pretense that it was going to be super glued back together.
Lovely.
And then it hit landfill.
Lovely. That's a lovely story.
Lovely, isn't it? Yeah, lovely story, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, was there a funeral for that one or not? Did you gather around?
Just close family and friends for that one.
There's a lot of funerals in this. Look at this. 12th of December, 2014, spent £205... right, on the polyphonic octave generator, a POG, the POG 2.
Oh, yeah. Still got that. I can see it here.
Go on.
It's by my foot. It's not plugged in.
Oh, for God's sake.
But that is, the POG 2, a polyphonic octave generator.
Tell us what it does, Rob. Tell us what it does.
What she is, Tom, is she is a guitar pedal. And if you wanted to be playing like a lead line, but you want a bit of a bass line underneath it,
wonderful.
I just dial that in on the POG, boo, hit it with my foot, and suddenly it sounds like I'm playing with a bassman. It's fun. It's for rocking out in the garage.
So is that what you do? Are you a dad garage rocker now, Rob? Is that what's happened now? You've moved to the countryside.
Yes. Well, I've always enjoyed not being very good on instruments, and a lifelong love of music, and it spawned from my dad. We always had a piano in the house, so that was always for fiddling around on. But my dad had more guitars than he could play. He had about three, but he never really could play a whole song on all of them.
Right.
And thus I've been inspired and have taken up that mantle, you know. Completely self-taught. But now in the garage, which I've now insulated because I've been doing a bit of building of late.
Oh, yeah.
Which might start to show up on the Amazon trails.
Oh, excellent. Look forward to that.
I've got a drum kit and... And my son plays the drums now, so we rock out in the garage together.
That's fantastic! What a way to bond with your
and there's two other guys in the local villages. One guy in his 50s who plays the drums when we're allowed to.
Yeah,
and another guy in his late 40s who plays the drums when we're allowed to.
So do you get? Are you telling me you've formed a band of just drum players?
Yeah, it's only the band that Phil Collins would have dreamt of being in.
It sounds like some sort of Derbyshire version of Stomp.
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. Are you near the drums now? Can you jump up and hit some drums for me? Is that possible?
I've set the headphones off.
Yeah, that's the cans, mate. They're called cans.
Sorry.
Got him.
Now, you might find, because the dB levels peak out a little bit, Tom.
Okay, mate, I'm ready. I can...
Might get a sec.
Yeah, go on. Here we go. This is Rob heading over. Bit of drums. Here we go. This is the first time on my MacBook tester.
Here we go.
Yes!
That'll do, isn't it?
Oh! That's just so good.
And did it come through? Did it sound okay?
Yeah, I dropped the levels. I adjusted the dBs, mate. I don't want to get too technical. Yeah.
You rode the fader.
I rode your drums. Absolutely.
Not too hard. Don't put too much compression on it. I like you lose some of the subtlety.
Genuine flair and genuine snare on that, Rob. Thoroughly
there you go.
Loved it. Thoroughly enjoyed that. And I can tell also your musical here on the 26th of April, 2015, the Hornby 100H key of C descant recorder.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that is a terrifying time for any parent.
Mm-hmm. Of course it is. Yeah.
When you are asked to purchase a recorder and all you can do is give in, because you don't want to stamp on their dreams.
No.
But you want to shovel them as best you can towards a more tuneful instrument.
Yeah.
And all the best you can hope for when you order your child a recorder is that as soon as possible they lose interest in it.
Yeah, yeah. Because and the best way to do that is for you to be really encouraging of it, I find. The more encouraging you are, the more they're like, well, that's obviously shit if he's into it.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. It's not cool if dad's into it, listening to all this recorder music. And it's similar. I have a very similar approach with the violin. Whenever there's been a mention of the violin, it just to be really, really overexcited about it. It's the coolest thing ever. And eventually they back down and head towards the piano or a guitar or something like that.
Or a PlayStation, fingers crossed, PlayStation.
Or a PlayStation or just something that, you know, people will happily fucking listen to. Our old dog Ron is really deaf and the clarinet is the only thing he can still hear. He sees it, because it takes a little bit of assembling, and when it starts being assembled, he just gets up and goes, I'm going outside.
Laters.
Like, give me a shout when it's done.
Ron is gorgeous, and I've seen Ron on many of your brilliant videos, which we'll do a big plug for, by the way. We must do that. Of course. But how old? Because I've got an old dog as well now. Mine's nearly 15.
Yeah, Ron. Yeah, Ron's 14. So what? Now, what dog have you got? You've got Labradoodle.
I've got a Labradoodle. Labradoodle, mate. Of course I have. North London cliche. And she's 14 and a half, actually. And she looks a bit like Ron, actually.
What's her name?
Polly. Polly Wally Doodle. Polly Wally Doodle. And let's not get sidetracked. But
how's she doing?
Well, it's okay.
It's hard, isn't it, old dogs?
It's not much fun, Rob. It makes me sad because it's really there's a problem. It does make you go, well, listen, I'm going to enjoy every day we've got with her.
Yes.
And it's actually touch wood, she's fine at the moment, but she's deaf now. And the walks don't need to be very long anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, all those things. Oh, God. It's just like a series of lights going out. Ah!
It is. It's heartbreaking. I'm the same with Ron. Like, if I really try and think about kind of, it makes me too sad.
Yes.
But what's brilliant and always has been great about Ron is he's always been a challenge.
Right.
Whether that's been humping, soft furnishings.
How he found fame, of course.
How he found fame originally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Or whether it's wherever he is in the world, he always, he is the hardest dog, like, there.
Yeah.
And there's not even a conversation with him about that. And he's not an aggressive dog, but if any dog steps up to Ron, he's prepared to die. Like, it's insane. But he's completely controllable, but he just won't be. I remember when we lived in Crystal Palace, there was a pack of about 20 dogs that used to run around twice a day. It was brilliant. Mm. He's probably spent more time with other dogs, though, when we were in the city.
Yeah, of course they do. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and there was that little bit, and we were learning about dogs, that little bit of tussling that happens. There was even a great big Rottweiler there who just pushed a basketball around with his nose. He was a lovely dog. And there'd be the occasional little spat, but it took Ron a matter of weeks, and he was like, he was the boss.
Top dog.
Yeah, and he's been the same even when, like, you know, just any animal, horses, cars, cyclists, old people spending too long putting their shoes on the other side of the gate. They can get fucked. I tell you what, Tom, they can get fucked. And then, so he's now at a point where he can't hear anything, but constantly demands to go out, and he wheezes all the time. I mean, there's nothing we can do. Ultimately, obviously, his liver and kidneys are, you know, starting to slow down. So he drinks. We've now got a bucket of water by
Ron.
The door for him to
Ron.
Drink.
Yeah.
He has a bucket, and he fills up on it like a steam engine. It's incredible.
Just sprays piss all over the house.
And then, to be fair, always takes it outside. But good he doesn't lads. Cock his leg anymore. He just leans forward. Just from the hips.
Oh, one of those.
Does old man wheeze.
Yes.
That's
the equivalent of me having a sit-down wee.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I totally get where he's coming from.
Yeah.
But I've made a pact with myself. But he remains a challenge. Like, some of the smells that he's capable of making are incredibly challenging.
And you'll miss those smells. You'll miss those smells one day.
He's really flatulent. If he's lying on his side and you can stroke farts out of him. He farts most times when he gets up or sits down or moves. He also, his breath smells like the dicks of 1,000 madmen.
He's like a filthy bagpipe, isn't he?
Yeah.
Just
his breath is like, it smells like so many helmets. It's horrid.
So we've got the same thing. So Polly sleeps on my side of the bed, bedroom rather. And Beth has been thinking for about 2 years now, she's been thinking that it was me that smelled like that. And the other day she was over on my side of the bedroom because she doesn't have much cause to go over there. She was like, holy shit, it's Polly, it's not you. Genuinely, she thought it was bits of me just accruing cheese. And it's not, it's just Polly stinks. Just like just like this lovely, cuddly, beautiful looking corpse. November 2016, the 10-meter ADSL cable. That is premium quality gold-plated contact pins. Mate, someone's doing all right.
Yep. Yeah.
Any comments on that?
I just probably got that just hanging up. You know, if I had people coming over, I'd pop that on the wall there and they'd say, what's that? I'd go, that's just 10 meters of gold-plated ADSL. I think... What? When was that bought?
That was bought in November 2016, I think.
Yeah, that was bought in error.
Lovely stuff.
I think. Well, I needed to get the Wi-Fi router from the one room and into the kitchen because we live in a bungalow. The rooms aren't on top of each other. Tricky to get Wi-Fi to fire to all corners.
So you were literally laying cables in order to
Yeah. And I ended up having to drill one through the kitchen wall to come through.
Wow.
And then it still didn't really work. But now I'm talking to you from my garage.
And so far, Rob, touch wood, absolutely robust, robust.
And I'll tell you how we're doing this because I need to cancel the old Wi-Fi. What an idiot. I'll just write that down.
Oh, yeah, get that done.
We've now got, you're having a lot of the rural areas. It's called GigaPeak. And it's a mobile thing. It's 5G.
No.
And to tell you where it comes from, and I love this.
The sky.
My local garden centre.
Isn't that
incredible? It's an essential business, a garden centre.
I love garden centres.
It's great. It's like how you cope in a pandemic by diversifying, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's like a farm shop in there now.
And it's just that you go there and you come home and you're like, I've got 5G. And a bird bath.
Yeah, it's incredible. Oh. And there's also now a beauty salon in there.
Oh.
So you can get ericaceous compost. Have you got any trellis? Back of the yard, mate. Anal bleach, other side of the car park. It's incredible. You can do everything.
Oh, do you know what? I feel like there's a whole, genuinely, I say this all the time, but there is a whole spin-off podcast. Well, there's a sitcom, or a spin-off podcast in the garden centre because it's gone way above and beyond what gardens are supposed to be. And it is, the lockdown has pushed that agenda, definitely.
I've written a little treatment for one based on our local garden centre. I should maybe start touting it about, shouldn't I?
I think you should tout, you've got some connections, you know, get in touch with Ben Elton, mate, come on. You've got your Upstart Crow email list. Get on that.
Mate, I would be delighted to send that to all the broadcasters and be turned down again.
It's a pleasure. A pleasure and a privilege to hear. Just to hear a
note. Can you just spend 4 months making a full draft of that, Rob? While we...
for no money?
While we get someone else in who's not interested in any of the scripts they weren't on board with at the beginning and then just comes in and kills all the babies.
It's always nice to get a no from a new generation. You know what I mean?
It's nice, isn't it? Yeah, it lets you know you're still not relevant.
Just if you're in any doubt. 19th of December. Oh, this is a classic Christmas present. December 2017. Yeah. This is really romantic. This must be for Helen.
It's quite last minute. Yeah.
Oh, mate, you've bought a door wing mirror. Yeah, it's an outer heated wing mirror you've bought on the 19th of December. That is, Helen, I love you. Here's your main present.
Yeah, well, nothing really shows a lady a lover than a heated door mirror.
Yeah.
Do you know, because I could have gone for an unheated one, couldn't I?
You could have.
Again, I thought, you know, she is worth it. I'm going the extra mile. I'm getting her a heated one. Yeah. So she can keep it in her pocket wherever she is.
Yeah.
So if she's out like graffitiing or, you know, putting dog crap through people's letterboxes.
Which she does, which as we know she does. Yeah, she does.
Yeah, it keeps her out of Borstal. Yeah. Then if she gets cold, she put her hands in the pocket and then she can warm them on the heated door mirror.
Absolutely lovely. Okay.
And she liked it. I mean, I put that in the corner of her room and she'd look at it. She was really interested in it. And she'd poke at it and everything. Really, really enjoyed it.
You're such a great husband. I've always said that about you. I always say to Beth, I wish I could be more like Rob Rouse. I've always said that. February 2017, a reinforced air drying modelling clay. Modelling clay.
Yes.
Is this you or the kids or?
That was inspired by Spencer Jones.
Oh, lovely. Spencer Jones. Yes, of course.
Yep.
Right.
And I've been to see him when I was down in London and and we made some clay things, and it just hadn't occurred to me you could just buy a big bag of clay.
You can, yeah.
And then came back and we started making stuff. The children rapidly lost interest, but me and Helen have made several really quite detailed busts of each other.
Like a sort of Lionel Richie hello video vibe.
Very much like a Lionel Richie hello video. Oh. Obviously, Helen rubbed a lot of it on the walls. But you know, I think as long as she is expressing herself, and it's better that she does it with clay.
Well, or Rob, it's quite useful when she does it with words, because we should mention what Helen's got up to in the last year or so. I mean, I know this podcast is ostensibly about you, but come on.
Yeah, well,
she doesn't just scrawl filth on walls, does she?
No, Helen's been really busy. Helping me launch my Patreon site, patreon.com/Rob Rouse.
There it is.
Where Monday to Friday, I post original comedy in the terms of sketches, songs, films, all sorts of stuff. And you can join from just a pound. It's pay what you want.
Just a pound, eh?
Essentially, but you get a bespoke exclusive comedy post. Sent direct to your inbox. No spam, no nothing. You don't have to troll through social media to find something funny amongst the horror. Oh. And Helen's been helping me launch that, which I've been doing for 9 months. So there's over 100 posts up there. It's astonishing value. She also wrote a kid's book and stuff.
She did what? No, that's not what I'm asking at all, Rob. No, I'm all about your Patreon. So she's, not only has she been helping you, I mean, helping you with many things on many levels, but also the kids. So her kids, but this is dead exciting, isn't it? When's it coming out?
Yeah, well, it's out. Came out on February the 4th. It was launched.
Oh, okay.
It's called The Boy Who Made Everyone Laugh. And it's available to buy wherever you buy your books.
Uh-huh.
And it's a beautiful story. Obviously, so what happened was we came back from the Edinburgh Festival in 2018 when we'd done a show together, and I sort of went back off on doing gigs and stuff and back to old normal.
Good.
Sorry, I felt like an absolute tit saying old normal.
But it worked very well though.
It's as bad as saying new normal. new normal. and Helen, she found some crayons and some wall space and started expressing herself. Now, I would get in from my gigs late at night, and once I'd finished clearing up the mess, I started deciphering some of the scrawlings and documenting them.
Uh-huh.
And very quickly, it occurred to me that she'd written a children's book. So obviously I was able to take a big helicopter view over it.
Yeah.
Despite a lot of banter in our house that Dad's not really a reader. And I think if you open Helen's ghost written book, I use my fingers there, parentheses, it says at the back, she makes a very funny joke saying how great it was to have me kind of word for word, line by line, helping her with the book, because there are jokes out there that I'm not much of a reader. But she
says that's
not true. But so it basically says at the back of the book. So if you buy the book, you want to skip to the back of it. There is cast iron conclusive proof in print in perpetuity that I read a lot of books. it's a beautiful book. It's about It's loosely and ostensibly based on our son, who has lived with a stammer since probably he's been about three, I think.
Okay.
And it kind of comes and goes, and there's been times in his life when it's been harder, and there's times in his life when it's been less of an issue for him.
Right.
It's about a little boy who has a stammer, who's about to start secondary school, and he wants to be a stand-up comedian, but he thinks he's not going to be able to try and do that until he's got rid of his stammer. And what's so lovely about it, it's a really funny book, and it's really beautifully written, and really it's really heartwarming and touching and really real. And it was great. She wrote it. Well, obviously, as I just deciphered the
yeah, yeah, yeah. She started. Yeah.
And each time I'd finished deciphering the crayon scrawlings, she would then very slowly, read them out to our son, so that to check that it resonated, it made sense.
Aha, well,
obviously, she wasn't. Yes. I wasn't deciphering her scrawlings directly on him.
Right, right.
But just to check.
What you're trying to say is that she was involved in the writing of this book as well.
She was, yeah, she was around, you know.
Okay.
Doing stuff, enjoying her wing mirror and everything.
Mm-hmm. yes.
So she would, as I say, very slowly, with the aid of a ruler, read out the chapters one at a time to our son, who was very patient. And then he would kind of sign them off or point out any changes that he felt I needed to help her with.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. And then she just wrote it. I just wrote it up for her. And then at the kitchen table, and then sent it out to loads of publishers and agents and stuff.
Mm.
And after, you know, what's incredible is when you drill down into the numbers of books that get written and ones that don't get finished and then ones that don't get rewritten,
yes,
that don't get sent out, that get thank you but no thank you,
yes,
and then keep going and then find someone who goes, wow, this is amazing.
It's incredible. What an achievement.
The drop-off rate is astonishing.
Yeah.
And that she'd never, you know, it was her first book she'd written.
Mm.
But she spent her life writing, you know, on people's houses and walls and things. So she spent her life writing, whether it's been stories, short stories, plays, shows we've worked on together and stuff. And it just feels like it's her time, and it's so cool to watch it and to be there.
That's wonderful.
And obviously, you know, to have written it for her and be there,
yeah,
and just see how she's, do you know, it feels, you know, when someone, it's a weird thing, like, could, I don't know how, when did you start doing stand-up?
2001.
So I always feel that, I mean, I don't regret anything in my career. But what I would have loved is if things had come to me or I'd been given a lot of the chances and opportunities I got when I had more chops.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And it's a funny thing that especially stand-up show business is after what's really, really new and what's brand new and fresh and exciting and they get buzzy about. Now, every now and then someone comes through and they are bang, box, fresh, ready to go. Like someone like Peter Kay.
Yeah.
So he won So You Think Funny the year before me. And then the next year he's doing Live at the Top of the Blackpool Tower. Like,
yeah,
he was ready. And I popped out when I did. And I think in hindsight, bits of me weren't ready. Like I wasn't ready to, couldn't wrap my head around what it was.
Mm.
But what's amazing watching Helen is, here's someone who's been, you know, she was an actor and she's been creative her whole working life, and it's come along, and the right thing, she wrote the right thing at the right time, the right people got hold of it.
Yeah.
And it really, it's connected with people, and she's got all the skill set and all the self-knowledge and understanding and compassion and life experience, and she's, you know, all of it, she's worked with kids, she's taught kids for years.
Yeah.
She's just got that connection and it's all come together.
Yeah. And she's locked and loaded, isn't she? She's good to go.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's so good. And I couldn't be more thrilled for it. It's I'll level with you. It's been the thing that's got me through this, you know, essentially, let's be honest, like as a someone who's essentially a live performer, at a point when I could be going, I've lost my entire identity.
Yeah.
You know, a bit. Obviously, I'm doing the patreon.com/Rob Rouse every day, Monday to Friday. You can join from just a pound, and I'd love you to get on board. And it's an absolute chock full of fun stuff. And me and Helen do a podcast on there every week as well.
Yeah.
And I love doing it. It's so much fun. It's like I get to do a little gig to a lovely little group of people every day.
But
it's weird, isn't it? Like for anyone who's a comic, but so many people, whether you're, I don't know, you worked in any kind of business where you were face-to-face, you work in a shop, you work for a charity, in a, you know, you run a cancer research shop, everything. It's all changed. And so many of us have lost our identities and having to find new ones. And I was reading something, I can't remember, on the, I think it was on Twitter this morning, about someone saying that they, replying to Nihal Arthanayake, who did a brilliant interview with my son and Helen on Five Live, and it was beautiful. And he was replying to someone who said they worked in a cancer research shop. That was it. And they obviously are really missing working with people.
Mm.
And it's a really weird thing how we're all, I'm losing my train, but how we, our identities are so tied up in what we do.
The rest of the world. I just think that, especially our type of, I can't believe we've almost gone serious now, Rob. We've tried so hard to avoid this.
Someone's going to say anus.
Come on,
minute.
We've got it. But I just think the way that we, especially in our chosen careers, they're all built on the engines of ego. And egos are great when you've got an audience and other people and a world to enjoy and look at. And the problem is when that world disappears, the ego just goes fucking mental because it's got nowhere to go. It's got nothing to do. And it just
can
drive yourself insane very quickly. And it's so good that you know, you've got things like this to keep you sane, but to keep other people sane as well. You know, people.
Yeah, absolutely. Stuff. Absolutely. Well, it's looking at it going like, if I've learned how to really, I really enjoy doing online gigs.
Yeah.
And I've learned that little thing that I was terrified the first time I did an online gig, and I stood up and I was shouting.
Yeah.
And,
hello! Yeah,
because I'm quite a kinetic, energetic performer. And I learned I've got to sit down and then use that little rectangle, then go, right, so what can I do with that? And then you have to, then you can, you know, you can bring things, and that's your frame. Yeah. So operate within that frame and then muck around with it. You've got, it's redefining what the boundaries are, and then, and accepting, you know, that this thing that I've been doing for 20 odd years that I, you know, love and I've been lucky enough to, you know, keep a roof over my head with, I've never had another job. At some point might end up, in terms of the economics of my life, being a bit of a hobby for a while.
Yeah.
But then that's also a test of like, do you love it? Will you still do it for free? Is it part of you? Or were you doing it for the right reasons? And I think
it's making you stop and question a lot of things. It's a gap year. It's an enforced gap year for everyone.
Yeah, totally. And maybe it could be a lot longer. So I kind of figure out I'm going to wrap my head around, you know, doing stuff online. And then I've become better at editing. I've started better at recording music, other stuff that I can use for other things. And then also like kind of, hopefully becoming better at housework.
Well, I mean, listen.
You know, picking up the burden off Helen because she's busy, you know.
Well, I'm in a similar situation with my wife. I'm more than happy to be eclipsed by my wife. It's working very well for me. I'm looking forward to playing a lot of golf.
Great.
But it's, you know, it's great to have all the online stuff. You know, it's important to know that there's always OnlyFans. You know, you can always get on there and
is that where you do porno?
Yeah, it's just sexy stuff.
Let
me know.
Hard to do that and homeschool, I've found.
Right. Dad, what are you doing in there? One second.
My niche market is men in their late 60s who are on antidepressants, and it's they take ages, Tom.
Well, here's what you can show them. In fact, I've got the perfect item for you to, maybe you could use this on your first OnlyFans video for your niche market.
Yeah.
And this is the final object we're going to for today, Rob, okay, as we end this wonderful episode of My Mate Bought a Toaster. I'm calling it, by the way, it is wonderful because you're wonderful.
Thank you.
Bought, this is classic, the first installment on Rob Rouse's OnlyFans is going to be him and one can of brake and clutch cleaner. Wins.
Yeah, well, as I turn around here, Tom, I can actually see three of the little beauties on top by my sink that I plumbed into the garage there.
I tell you what, I hate nothing more than a filthy clutch. Oh, God, that's a bad clutch, isn't it? Naughty
you've
clutch.
Got it, you've got to get it clean. Got to get it clean. Very important to have it clean. That's, brake and clutch cleaner. One of the other things I did at the start of lockdown is for a couple of hundred quid, I bought an old banger on eBay, an old Triumph Spitfire.
Oh, wow.
With
okay.
the idea of going, what I have got now is a surfeit of time, and I might try and learn to do mechanics. And because I've done a bit of building work for mates, you know, just like, they buy the materials and I build it for them so I can get some experience at doing some other stuff. And I've learned that, and like doing the Patreon posts, patreon.com/Rob Rouse.
Got it, smashed it.
I've learned, and it's what you do when you're doing stand-up, you're constantly making things and solving problems. Yes. And I found it a real tonic to learn, like, because I've always been interested in DIY and stuff and building things, to how to make stuff. And I've built some guitars from kits, and then I built one out of a shelf, which pretty much works. And I found that it, making things is something that, whether it was, you know, just sitting there squatting, playing
that's
with Lego.
One, you could definitely make things when you squat, but yeah.
Certainly, I could make all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them gold. but essentially, I realised that, as you're talking about your ego earlier, like, that is an element that's tied into stand-up and performing, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's also the bit of you that's fragile and why it's hard. And if a gig doesn't go right, why you feel bad and you want to just sit in the corner for a week licking your wounds like a cat that's fallen in the bath. Or a bad review can hurt you, and the good ones, you realise they're just as dangerous.
Yeah.
It's because actually if your compulsion to do it is to make things, is to make something that didn't exist, then actually I've found that whilst my identity has been enormously challenged in the last, you know, year, that by making stuff, whether it's the Patreon post or building or whatever, that's really satisfied that part of me. And I've realised that it's all about trying to find a creative route through your life,
yeah.
as not just like the gig or the show or whatever it is. It's working out what, and it gives me a sense of, I don't know, just a sense of order or place or something.
I love that. I love that phrase, that you make something that didn't exist. I think that's a, you know, I hate to sort of finish the podcast in a kind of, and in many ways it's a lot like Jesus kind of vibes, but if there's, you know, fuck it. If there's one message.
Please finally talk about Jesus.
If there's one message we want to try and get across, make something that didn't exist before. Make something.
Yeah, yeah.
That's such a great bit of life advice. I love
it's completely accidental because I'm an idiot and I've stumbled across all of this. But that's surely why when we were living in caves as cave people, we drew on the walls, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, and you either draw on the walls or you put Cliff Richard on the walls.
Yeah,
One of the two. All right, I'll let you go and have a tinker. Rob, thank you very much indeed for joining us on My Mate Bought a Toaster. And that Patreon one more time.
Oh, yeah. Patreon.com/ Rob Rouse.
Thank you.
And Helen's book is called The Boy That Made The Boy Who Made Everyone Laugh. And it's available wherever you buy your books.
Yes, yes, yes. Maybe on Amazon. I don't know. We're not trying to push you in that direction.
No, it's definitely on there. It's definitely on there. And even if you don't purchase it on Amazon, if you leave a review on there, apparently all that stuff Bezos is not has no idea. Oh. He's got no idea.
Of course
Bezos.
He hasn't. He's one foot out the door, Bezos. He's off, mate.
He's on his way. And he was never that arse, was he?
Later, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Rob, thank you. You're a star. Thank you so much for joining us on My Mate Bought a Toaster.
Tom, it's always a tonic to spend any time with you. It's been an absolute treat. I love the good of baby, and I want you for
the
rest of my
days. The fabulous Rob Rouse. Now, I don't know if you know about this, but I've actually got a Patreon site. Have I mentioned it? I told you about this. Oh, I have. Patreon.com/toasterpod. If only I could put that to music.
Patreon.com/toasterpod. Patreon.com/toasterpod.
Oh, yes. You see? That's because the Patreon bucks are coming in now and I can pay for even more stings. This week, I'm talking to Dan Thomas about Rob Rouse's purchase history. And we get stuck into Cliff Richard, as you would. So this is a clip, Dan, of Cliff Richard playing Devil Woman live. So see how you get on with this. Can you hear this all right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can, yeah. Cliff Richard, Devil Woman, and many other things besides that discussed on My Mate Bought a Spin-Off Podcast, available now over at patreon.com/toasterpod. I will stop going on about the Patreon. Next week, I'm going to be talking to Andy Osho. It's a great episode. Oh, look, it drops this Friday on patreon.com/toasterpod. Or, of course, it'll be out for free, you cheapskates. Next week, Wednesday morning, first thing. Have a great week. I'm going now. Lots of love. Bye.
It's an S-Pod thing. The podcast revisiting S Club 7's insane TV show.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone's binge-watched this. Anyone who's not on drugs.
Thank you for bringing this into my life. It was honestly truly appalling.
Guests helped me analyse the show in more detail than anyone ever asked for.
It feels weird to me to say the phrase sex object in a show that was aimed at six-year-olds.
Do you think one of the problems with this show is that 7 is too much?
It's an S-Pod thing from Great Big Owl.